Neville, who's at Boston Children's Hospital, Harvard Medical School.
Thank you, Steve. Happy to be here. So I'll be presenting on the third intervention, which is eliminating the tax subsidy of food and beverage advertising directed at children and adolescents. I want to acknowledge my collaborators and co-authors, many of whom are sitting next to me or in the front row, who are enthusiastically applauding our talks, representing the Harvard School of Public Health, Columbia, Temple University, and Deakin in Australia. Similarly, I have no conflicts of interest to disclose and want to acknowledge the generosity of our funders. So to give a brief introduction, it's no surprise to folks in this audience that children spend quite a lot of time watching TV every day. These estimates come from Kaiser Family Foundation and our data from 2005, and I present these because we're conducting simulation models of the 2005 population. TV viewing is quite high, and it peaks in early adolescence from ages 11 to 14, and it is higher among racial ethnic minority youth and youth of low SES or low socioeconomic status. There has been a little bit of a shift in proportion of screen time that is television versus other screen media that's happened since 2005, but still TV represents a substantial proportion of screen time exposure among youth. In addition to TV content, children are exposed to advertising and that content as well. Children are estimated to view as 40,000 commercials on TV per year. And food-related TV ads are primarily, no surprise, for high-calorie, low-nutrient foods and drinks. It is no surprise then that television viewing has been associated with obesity, and there's actually quite a substantial literature that documents the evidence of an impact of changes in TV viewing on changes in BMI. And there are several sort of hypothetical pathways that you could imagine that would link TV viewing to obesity, one that operates through inactivity such that children who are watching TV are not doing other active things. Through a dietary intake pattern, meaning that kids are watching TV are eating more calories. And the research really indicates a dominant role of advertising in producing these changes. Sort of an anecdote is that children are not watching TV. They would not be outside, running sprints in the street. They might be doing other inactive things. So surprisingly, that inactivity pathway does not seem to explain this association at all, actually, and that the relationship between TV and BMI is driven by increased energy intake, specifically commercial TV viewing, which points to the role of advertising. And we know that food companies spend $1.6 billion a year advertising to children and adolescents, and I think that serves as strong indirect evidence that it's working. They're not spending $1.6 billion a year if they don't know that it is increasing sales and increasing consumption of their products. So there are several regulatory approaches to consider, the first of which is self-regulation, and not surprisingly, the food industry is very enthusiastic about this approach. There's evidence of limited effectiveness. I think there has been an effort to promote self-regulation, and that has resulted in some positive changes, but the changes are not consistent across companies, across age groups, across racial, ethnic groups, and so there's really limited effectiveness of the scope of impact of self-regulation. Next, we could consider sort of government regulation, and outright government restriction to advertising is unlikely. There was an attempt in the late 1980s to regulate advertising to children, which failed miserably, I think would be a safe way to summarize it, and actually left the FTC with less ability to regulate advertising to children and adolescents. And because of these substantial political and legislative hurdles related to First Amendment law, it's unlikely the government will actually restrict advertising directly to children. So that leaves us with tax incentives and disincentives, which are known to be powerful tools for promoting health and the well-being of a population. So interestingly, this is something I didn't know when I started working on this project several years ago, that there's actually quite an incentive for food companies to advertise, in general, advertising to children, adolescents, or adults. The federal income tax code allows advertising costs to be deducted as an ordinary business expense, And what this treatment of these costs essentially does is it serves as a federal subsidy of advertising costs, which is extremely advantageous to advertising and food companies. Assuming a corporate income tax rate of 35%, the U.S. government is giving the food and beverage industry an annual tax subsidy of more than $500 million on the $1.6 billion that's spent annually on advertising to children and adolescents. So this tax loophole, or this sort of subsidy that exists, has been recognized by legislators. Specifically, there is the Stop Subsidizing Childhood Obesity Act, which is legislation introduced in July by Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut. And the legislation here states that closing a tax loophole that allows companies to claim a tax deduction for marketing unhealthy food products to children. So again, exactly trying to do what we will be simulating in this intervention. What this legislation would do is not affect a company's ability to market any food product, but it would stop the current practice of taxpayers subsidizing these practices, so it would just become more expensive for food companies to market directly to food or directly to children and adolescents. So the intervention that I'll be modeling is eliminating, again, the tax deductibility of TV advertising costs for nutritionally poor foods and beverages to children ages 2 to 19. I want to thank my colleagues Jessica and Michael for walking through the modeling framework, and they've done most of my heavy lifting for me, so you have a good sense of how this works. The logic pathway here is actually quite simple. The intervention that we are simulating does not aim to change the amount of TV that children are seeing, just decreasing how obesogenic every hour of TV viewing is. So again, we know that TV viewing is associated with BMI, but if we intervene and change the content of advertising, every 1 hour that children are viewing TV, they would be exposed to fewer advertisements, which would then result in a change in BMI and ultimately a change in disability-adjusted life years. So the primary estimate that we used to sort of quantify this effect of reduced exposure to ads for unhealthy foods per hour of TV came from an exhaustive literature search that was based on 5 recent completed systematic reviews and meta-analyses. And there are actually a few, we had several criteria of interventions that we were trying to identify. We were looking for RCTs that targeted an audience of children between the ages of 2 and 18 that were at least 6 months in length and focused only on a reduction in screen time. And a tribute to sort of the work that's being done in obesity is that most interventions are multi-component and focus not just on screen time, but on sugar-sweetened beverages or on physical activity. And so there were only 3 RCTs that were identified that met the criteria. And we used an estimate from one of these 3 RCTs conducted by Tom Robinson. And the estimated change in BMI per hour of screen time was 0.33 BMI units per hour of screen time per day. So to cost the intervention, because although there's legislation that has been proposed, this has not been rolled out anywhere, so we had to make some assumptions about how much such an intervention would cost. One thing to think about is taxes don't necessarily, or a tax is essentially a cost transfer. So it's transferring money from a food company to the government, but doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily new money. So the only costs that were included in this cost effectiveness simulation were sort of new costs that would be incurred because of the intervention, which is overhead costs to the tax system, including administrative costs and expenses related to audits, litigation, and things of that nature. As Michael described, we also estimated equivalent costs for food industry to comply with the new tax. We used mean salaries for tax examiner, collector, and revenue agent from the Bureau of Labor Statistics with a total cost of $755,000 to enact the tax, with a wide uncertainty interval that we modeled because of the assumptions that were sort of inherent in costing this intervention. For short-term outcomes, our per-person BMI effect for this simulation was 0.13 BMI units. Total BMI units reduced were 9.7, and a cost of BMI unit produced was 0.08 dollars, so 8 cents. Steve asked for a show of hands of who might pay 8 cents to reduce their BMI 1 unit. I'm not going to actually ask you to do that, but it's actually a very cost-effective, a very inexpensive intervention given the BMI effects. If these effects are maintained over the life of the cohort, keeping in mind that there is uncertainty in extrapolating health effects over a lifetime, the intervention is, in fact, dominant, meaning that it results in a net savings in disability life years and cost savings over the intervention becomes cost savings after 20 years. The total life years saved are 535,000. Total disability adjusted life years averted, 694,000. A reduction in healthcare costs of almost $6 billion and a reduction in healthcare costs per dollar spent of more than $7,000. The other presenters also commented on equity of the intervention. As I mentioned early on, TV viewing or media use among racial ethnic minority youth is actually higher, and so the benefits of this intervention may actually sort of favor the segment of the population that is most at risk for obesity and obesity related consequences. So the equity is sort of in the favorable side. Results from this modeling indicate that there's strong evidence that eliminating tax deductibility of TV advertising costs for nutritionally poor foods and beverages would lead to a cost-effective BMI reduction across the population. Assuming the long-term maintenance of effect, the intervention can be cost savings, again, would be cost savings at 20 years. Although we don't account for this sort of shift in tax money in the cost-effectiveness equation, it is worth noting that there would be sort of a shift in spending on the food industry that would likely benefit the government. We would imagine that food industry would perhaps reduce their advertising directly to children, but would still continue to advertise. Based on some published data from Chew It All, we were able to estimate that eliminating the tax loophole would generate an estimated $356 million in tax revenue annually on that $1.6 billion that these companies are spending to advertise to children and adolescents each year. Amending the tax code, we conclude, is a feasible approach to reducing children's advertising exposure and thereby achieving substantial health-related gains in terms of health of the population and BMI units. Thank you.